session number 9423, reel 8.
Mr. Plimmer, Reel 8. You said you got some DMOB papers.
Yes.
Could you say what they consisted
of?
Well,
this particular fellow that took me there was a perfect stranger to me. I didn't know him from Adam. He did all the talking. We went in there and we went to some desk and we talked.
This is Crystal Palace, yes?
No, this is in York Road.
I see, sorry.
The record of it in York Road.
Yeah.
And there was a bit of palaver went on and I signed a couple of three papers and he picked these papers up in an envelope and said, come on, and we went out there and went to Penge. I remember getting off at Penge, and then we went into Crystal Palace, which was a demobilisation centre. And when we was there, there was a group of about a dozen or more waiting, and we waited with them until 20 people made a group of 20. And then a group of 20 we went through the demobilisation procedure.
Could you describe that procedure?
Went from table to table, signing various bits of paper, getting bits of money and ration cards, taking off all our equipment, handing over all the things that didn't belong to us. They gave us a sandbag and we put all our personal things in there. We kept our coat on and we left Crystal Palace with nothing but our khaki jacket and trousers and underclothes and our hat and our coat and a sandbag with a private there and a railway warrant to go to my home.
Did you receive any payoff at all, any money owing to you?
Oh, we got paid. We got some pay. Got a little pay. And, well, we went on leave for we were sent on leave, you see. I think a leave period lasted about 3 months. But I think we got a fortnight's pay leave and off we went. And the rest of us came to us by post, various bits by post.
Did you receive any other sort of cash entitlements?
We had a gratuity, a very small gratuity. But as I say, our pay and this gratuity came to us when we were home by post. And finally we got a note to say we were transferred to the Army Reserve.
I see. Did you ever think of at that time, of continuing in the army?
No.
Did you not want to at all?
No, didn't want to. We were asked to, in Tournai, if we would like to sign on, but I didn't want to sign on. I wanted to get home out of it. But then, of course, the unemployment situation was just as bad as it is now.
Well, could you describe what happened to you next then, once you'd been demobbed? What happened?
Well, I went back to the shipbuilding yard straight away. I didn't waste any time. I think I came back on, say I came back on the Monday, I didn't hang around for about a month before I went straight back to work. I went back to work and when I finished my apprenticeship, the day I finished my apprenticeship, I got sacked. I didn't, not sacked, but stood off, no work.
What year would that be?
That would be in 1919. Mm-hmm. That would be 1919. And then, as a matter of fact, although I've served my apprenticeship, I've never done a day at it in my life. Never worked at it. And I walked around unemployed, trying to get jobs here and there, but couldn't get anywhere. There were thousands out of work. The whole entire town depended upon the shipbuilding industry. Everybody was out of it. Nobody was working. And then when I come to the time when my unemployment looked like finished, I just went and joined the army. Just like that.
At the time, did you resent having to do that? Did you resent having to go and join the army again when you
no,
so soon
a bit.
Left
no,
it?
No, no, no. I knew that the pay was good, you see. At the time when a bloke joined the army then, he got about 3 bob a day, I think. But if he'd got 2 years' service in, he got 4 bob a day. Well, I'd got 2 years' service in, and the service which I'd put into war counted because I joined up within a specific period. If I'd left it longer, it wouldn't. So I got 4 bob a day. Then I went into the army, and I passed a trade test, which gave me another 6 months a day. So I was getting 31 and 6 months a week, all foul. You know, and whereas on the dollar I was probably getting £1 a week. Mm-hmm. Want me to dish it up?
What unit of the army did you join?
I joined Royal Engineers.
And how long did you stay in Royal Engineers?
Well, I should have come out of the Royal Engineers during the war. See, I joined in 1920. I should have come out in 1941. But of course, you didn't come out of the army when there was a war on, so they re-enlisted me again and I came out in 1945.
And what did you do after that?
Well, I went into the civil service. You're not recording this, are you?
I am.
I went into the civil service.
Okay, thanks.
And then I tell you what, the day I came out of the army, I started then, the next day, I got a job. The following day I came out of the army, didn't hang around for weeks. Mm-hmm. And I stopped in the civil service till I retired.
Right, may I ask you a couple of things to do with the First World War? First of all, looking back on the war, do you think it affected you in any particular way, the First World War?
Well, I can't think of any offhand. It didn't, what you might call, make me more aggressive or anything like that. I didn't wander around a place and I've been in the trenches, so it didn't affect me in that way at all. Because lots and lots of my pals had been in there. Anyway, people never talked about the war. It was a thing that had no conversational value at all. I mean, if you went to talk to a person about the war, it's simply one who'd been there twice as long as you had and done more than you. Or you might talk to somebody who was absolutely disinterested. No conversational value at all. Not at all.
Do you feel it might have hardened you towards things like death or injury,
well,
that sort of thing?
I don't regard death as being anything that's in other than inevitable, isn't it? I mean, it's something we've all got to face, isn't it? Yeah. No, it didn't harden me. I'm not hard-hearted. No.
Looking back on it, did you think that the First World War was a just war, a war worth fighting?
Well, it started off in a reasonable manner. One was expected it to be conducted in a decent sort of way, but it developed into something ghastly, because I don't think people at the beginning of the war realised the potential of military equipment. It was, at the beginning of the war, there was people fighting on horseback with swords and light artillery, but at the end of the war, it was, you know, the potential of the military equipment, well, look at it now, to what it is now, it was just the same between the beginning and the end of the war. It developed to such an extent that a man's life wasn't worth anything at the end of the war.
Yes, that's something we've not really discussed during the interview. On those massive attacks like the Somme, although you weren't present there, but you were involved in many operations, and indeed you actually talked at one point about a particular commander sending his men into an impossible situation where they could only get shot down. Did you feel that that those in charge, if you like, of the fighting had run it badly?
Well, of course, I don't know the position they were in. History tells us that they fought the Battle of the Somme to help the French at Verdun. They may have been compelled to fight it. The fact that they picked that particular area of ground was because probably the other areas were less vulnerable. It was a bad piece of ground, marshy ground or some, you know, and it was very strongly defended. I don't really know why they did pick that particular ground, but they did do. Anyhow, it was a catastrophe, wasn't it? They worked on the theory that they could eliminate the defences by bombardment, but it didn't work. It didn't work at all. It didn't work for our people, their people, when they bombarded us in March. We just come up out of our dugouts where they were and fired on them. I think that was a great catastrophe, that 1st of July. Have you ever been to the cemeteries there? There are hundreds and hundreds. They're inches apart.
You know, looking back on it, do you feel that many of those deaths were futile?
Oh, they were a complete waste of life, weren't it? I mean, the one thing that the area of ground they walked over was wide, a big wide area of ground. It wasn't as though they nipped out of the trenches about 30 yards away. They had a long expanse to walk through. And they failed in one thing there. They bombarded the wire, and it didn't do any good.
When you fought in the war, did you feel that you were led more competently, perhaps, than
not, I can't comment upon that. I mean, my chain of command didn't go beyond a lieutenant. I didn't know what happened about that.
Did you have confidence in these
people?
Yes,
he had a very good bloke in my section. I didn't remember his name very well. I won't mention his name in case he's listening.
All right, well, thank you very much indeed, Mr. Plummer.
All right.